All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, everyone. We are going to hear, we have nine cases on the docket. We're going to hear oral arguments in seven of them. Our first case is appeal number 05-1953, United States of America versus Ruben Hernandez. Mr. Fall.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Brian Fall. I am from the Federal Defender's Office in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I'm here today on behalf of Ruben Hernandez. The issue today is whether the district court sentence of 262 months was reasonable when it failed to address an issue raised by Mr. Hernandez's counsel as to whether or not his advanced age at the time of sentencing.
How old was he?
He was.
Be careful when you say advanced age with this panel.
If that's advanced.
I was just going to call your attention to that fact. anything less than 80 years is going to fall on deaf ears.
I apologize. The fact is the district court didn't, his counsel made an argument as to the fact that his age now and at the end of the sentence that will be imposed, he'll be at an age advanced even higher than the average life expectancy of Hispanic males, which Mr. Hernandez is.
What's the life expectancy for a 51-year-old Hispanic male?
77.1 years.
Well, he's going to be out when he's 69.
69 if he gets all of his good time. That's correct.
Right.
If he doesn't get his good time, he will be.
And then tell him to behave himself if he got a lot earlier.
But even at the, he won't. He'll still be on supervised release for another eight years after that. So he'll still have be serving his sentence.
And at that stage of the game, he probably won't care. But
no, that may be true. But again, the issue is whether or not the district court should have addressed the argument raised by counsel. At the time that Mr. Hernandez filed his brief.
Well, that's a good question, a good point, because I think there's a question here whether age was really properly raised here.
Yeah, it wasn't the major tenet of defense counsel's argument at sentencing, but it was raised. He commented on it a couple of times. Enough so that for the purposes of this, it was an argument that was made, and there wasn't much else as far as arguments to be made, and even as the district court noted, defense counsel was left with accordion playing as his best option. So there was age, and really he's kind of a nice guy. He plays the accordion. I mean, that's really the only.
Yeah, but don't you think you really have to pinpoint an issue and argue its importance before the district judge has to devote a lot of time to the point?
It should be raised, and you know, I'm going to argue that here it was adequately raised. I mean, it can't just be a passing. You can't just say, hey, you know, all the factors in the 3553A need to be addressed. He had mentioned his age, and that at the time this was done, he was going to be very old. And that as a reason why that the 262-month sentence would be unreasonable. Since Dean Mikhaychik, this court has had a number of rulings that are a little bit more in point that were not addressed in our briefs. Cunningham, Newsom II, and Rodriguez-Alvarez.
Yeah, but in Cunningham, that the defendant's situation was argued extensively by defense counsel and
no.
Alerted the district court that this is something that requires some comment.
No, I agree, but there's also another parallel that can be drawn between the two cases. In Cunningham, he argued a factor that was recognized even in the guidelines. I believe it's 5K2.13, which is the mental deficiency. Here, age under guidelines 5H1.1 can also be a reason for a downward departure. This is a recognized.
Do you think the accordion playing benefited the defendant or increased his sentence?
Yeah, I'm not sure Judge Griesbach's position on accordion playing.
In Wisconsin, accordion playing
was good. It's good.
Good
for
you. So I think there is that parallel between Cunningham and this case, that there's a recognized departure, a recognized reason to go down in this case, as there was in Cunningham. Unlike Newsom and Rodriguez-Alvarez, which I think were more about fact-finding and what the judge has to do in order to what kind of fact-finding he must partake on the record. A parallel that you can look to, I think, is something, as Cunningham notes, is some of these administrative decisions, like Social Security cases, where the judge has a duty to, if there's an evidence or an argument presented, he doesn't have to discuss all the evidence, but if there's something with merit, he must at least address it and have an analysis in
what
it.
What would he say?
I understand that Mr. Hernandez is 51 now. He'll be 77.
He should reiterate. You know, the Greeks have a great saying: that which is obvious is better left unsaid. He knows how old he is. You know how old he's going to be when he gets out. And he probably chuckled to himself when he was doing it.
But
you think he's required to suggest? I know he's old, and I don't care.
Right. That's something along those lines, John. Right. This is.
Really, what you're saying, this is the only thing that you could come up with.
For a meaningful review to take place in this case, we don't know. I mean,
you were appointed, weren't you?
Yes, both.
You had to reach for something.
Well. Yeah. But you know, this court doesn't get to see Mr. Hernandez. They don't know. In this case, you don't know how frail if he was or if he was robust, what kind of person he was. The judge was the person to make that decision. And for you to have an informed review under the for reasonableness, the judge should comment, or at least the argument was raised, he should at least let the reviewing court know that he didn't consider it a factor to be relevant to sentencing. As the record stands now, we don't know. We just don't know whether it's a relevant factor or not.
The converse of that is that the older you get, the more opportunities you have for convictions. And he had convictions when, looking here, 20, when he was 24, 27, 32, 35, 39, 43, and 45. So his criminal activity isn't tapering off. As
no.
He gets older, that's what you usually look for. People that get a little older, they are not involved in criminal activity.
Right, and I understand that. And also the same point, I mean, why this could be a sentencing factor. I mean, he's going to be 77 when he's done serving the sentence, when he's off paper. As Your Honor's commented, he's really not going to be doing much at that point. I mean, the need, it's greater than necessary to achieve the punishment that this crime deserves. He's going to be nothing but a burden on the system. He's going to be a financial.
By the time he gets out, drug may be legal. You know what I mean?
Well, that's true.
Keep him from his life of crime.
So I mean there are I believe there are relevant concerns about his age that could have been, that probably should have been addressed by the court. I mean, this isn't a...
What could the court say?
Well, I mean, the court could have said...
This man has a long pattern of crime. The only way that they can deter him is to put him behind bars.
Right, but he could have made a decision, or he could have said that by the time he's this age, he's no longer going to be a threat, and all he's going to be doing is costing, $21,000 or $23,000 or whatever it is a year.
What does he cost in the people that he sells drugs to that we have to treat after that? 20 people? Multiply that.
Right, but that's assuming that if the judge thought that he was still a threat after all these years, he would have commented on that and made his time. I'm out of time. I'd like to save the rest for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Farr. Mr. Funnell.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Tim Funnell. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin Green Bay Division. I represent the United States in this matter. I also represented the United States before the district court. I believe that this appeal really comes down to three questions. The first one...
I only caught two.
Which two were those, Your Honor?
It had to do with the accordion playing and the age.
The age is the main factor that I'm going to seize upon today.
That's what he seized upon, so it'd be a good thing to do.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. The three questions that I think are relevant are, first, did the defendant ask the district court to consider his age at the end of his sentence? as a mitigating factor at sentencing, and I'll simply refer to that as the age and mitigation issue, and the court has already commented on this. Did he sufficiently raise it? That's the first question. The second is, if he did sufficiently raise age and mitigation, did the judge fail to address it? And then the third is, even if the judge did fail to address age and mitigation, does that render this particular sentence unreasonable on the record before this court? As to the first question, did the defendant actually raise age and mitigation? I'm not convinced that he did. He certainly talked about it two different times, and if you look at the transcript at page 9 and pages 14 to 15, those are the two instances where defense counsel talked about it. But he certainly did not weave it into his principal argument as the defendant did in Cunningham, which he referred to earlier, and that's the language that the Seventh Circuit used in Cunningham. The defendant in that case used his long history of psychiatric illness and problems, and he wove that into a pattern as a mitigating factor at sentencing. That is not what happened here. Defense counsel simply raised the issue that the judge should give some consideration to where the defendant will be at the end of his sentence. Well, that's a far cry from what the defense did in Cunningham. It certainly was not a centerpiece of his argument to the court. So that's the first question. But even assuming that he sufficiently raised age and mitigation,
Is there a point where age would be a consideration?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is there a point where age would be... What if Mr. Hernandez was 80 years old when he stood before the sentencing judge?
I think it depends on the crime that comes before the court. I've certainly...
Let's say this crime. Nonviolent, but he has an extensive record.
I think, as the district court noted, drug dealing is not the type of offense where you have to be a robust young man in order to actively engage in drug dealing. This particular defendant certainly was not a young, robust man as he presented himself to the court. He was 51 years old. He had had some health problems, but that certainly did not stop him from dealing drugs. And since that is how he presented himself to the court on this offense of conviction, the court could look down the road and say, well, just because he's going to be in his 60s or his 70s doesn't make him less dangerous as a drug dealer when he gets out.
Well, I'm just wondering what age somebody would have to be at before the United States Attorney's Office would accede to a request for a reduced sentence because of his age.
Try 90. That's a good age.
That's a very difficult question to answer in the abstract. It's a very fact-specific inquiry. It depends upon the nature of the offense, the nature of the defendant before us. And certainly,
I mean, all these sentences under the guidelines are terribly long, and judges have different views about them, but we have to follow the guidelines, presumed to be reasonable. But if Hernandez here was 80 years old, would the government want a 21-year prison sentence for him?
If Mr. Hernandez had come before the court at 80 years old under the same circumstances that he did, the government would have made the same recommendation, which was for the low end of the guidelines that it made in this case.
Wow. So there. Okay. So that's. You think that's the position of the United States government then?
The government would have made the same recommendation, Your Honor. The second question is, even assuming the defendant sufficiently raised age and mitigation, did the judge fail to address it? I think, as the court has already indicated today, the issue was self-evident. The judge knew that the person before him was 51 years old. He knew what a 262-month sentence calculated out to in years, both in real time, or excuse me, in initial time and in good time. So certainly the judge had that information before him. The judge explicitly considered what he called, quote, unquote, the personal characteristics of the defendant, the qualities of the defendant. So I think that the judge did address his age and mitigation. But the third question is, even if the judge failed to address age and mitigation, does that render this particular sentence unreasonable? The government believes that it did not under the factors in Section 3553A. This was a post-Booker sentencing, and the district court treated it accordingly. at sentencing, the district court was faced with a 51-year-old defendant who had been convicted of conspiring to traffic approximately 17.5 kilos of cocaine, over 150 kilos of marijuana. That conduct occurred over two different states with offense dates from 2001 to 2004. His offense level was a 37, and that was simply based upon his relevant conduct. This defendant had also involved his wife and his son in the conspiracy, resulting in convictions and prison sentences for his wife and son. He had three prior convictions for drug trafficking, one from Wisconsin in 1987, one from Texas in 1991, and one from Michigan in 1993. He had other convictions as well. His total criminal history points were 16. That put him in a Category 6, even without considering the fact that he was a career offender. But he also qualified for career offender status, which brought him to a level 37 and criminal history category 6. So there were two different ways of calculating his offense level and his criminal history category, both of which brought the court to the same place on the guidelines, a level 37 and a criminal history category 6. Previously, this defendant had been fined, put on probation, ordered to serve time in jail, in prison. He'd been ordered to serve time on supervised release or parole. He had had his supervision revoked. Despite all those punitive and rehabilitative measures, his behavior did not change. He continued to deal drugs, and as the district court noted, if anything, he was getting bolder in what he was doing. He had a poor history of legitimate employment, and then we also have a guideline range of 262 to 327 months. The district court discussed all of those facts that I've just mentioned on the record. It explained its reasoning under Section 3553A. It acknowledged the advisory nature of the guidelines, the fact that it wasn't bound by the guidelines. The district court even went so far as to say, I looked for a reason to go below the guidelines. Was there a technical reason that the guidelines were applied to put this defendant in the category that he was? And the district court said, that information just isn't there. What I have before me is a career drug dealer who is a Category 6 in two different ways and whose relevant conduct puts him at a level 37. Now, the defense says all that discussion by the district court is not good enough because the judge did not explicitly mention his age at the sentencing. The statute and the case law do not require the judge to explicitly address every factor raised by a defendant, especially when it's not a principal issue and especially when it is not a relevant characteristic. This court in Cunningham has talked about that the judge can pass over in silence arguments that are clearly without merit. Now, in his reply brief, the defense concedes this, and they invoke the Fifth Amendment for the first time and the due process rights of the defendant, essentially arguing that the hearing was unfair and arbitrary. Certainly, in looking at the record before the court, the district court's comments, I don't think this hearing approaches unfairness or arbitrary. It is not even a close call in the government's opinion. The judge did everything that he needed to do and then some. The district court conducted a fair hearing and rendered a reasonable sentence. Unless the court has any further comments or questions for me, I'll simply stop my argument and ask the court to affirm the district court's sentence. Thank you.
Any further?
Just to respond to a couple points made by counsel for the government. The issue we're raising is not that all in total the sentence was unreasonable, but that a reasonableness can't be determined without an adequate record. What makes this sentence unreasonable is that there's no record to determine what was being relied upon by the judge to fashion the sentence. Second of all, as this court noted, what did he need? What kind of record did he need to establish about age? I mean, should he brought in his birth certificate? I mean, what? This isn't like a mental illness where you have psychologists who can examine him. It's his age. There's only so much you can do to raise the issue. As far as the district court judge's treatment of his age and relying on personal characteristics, it seems to me that if you're going to rely, you have to do more than just track the language of the statute. Again, somewhat akin to like a Social Security case, you can't just say, I find him uncredible. the claimant to be uncredible based on the factors for credibility, you need to say what made that decision. And I see that I'm running out of time, so at that point, we just will rely on our briefs and ask that the sentence be vacated.
Okay, thank you. This case will be taken under advisement.